Next matter on our agenda is draft advisory opinion 2022-06, the Hispanic Leadership Trust. Mr. Wang of the Wither Law Firm is here to answer questions from the commission, as is Ms. Selinkoff of the Office of General Counsel.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Morning.
Agenda document 22-28A contains a draft response to an advisory opinion request by Hispanic Leadership Trust, or HLT. HLT is a non-connected committee with the mission of electing Hispanic Republican candidates to Congress. It expects its initial board will consist of all but one current members of the Congressional Hispanic Conference. And HLT proposes to name two of those members as its chair and vice chair. HLT presented its proposed bylaws, including three fundraising-specific alternatives, and asks whether it would be a leadership PAC or affiliated with the chair or vice chair's existing leadership PACs. The draft concludes that, under the bylaws with proposed fundraising alternative C, HLT would not be a leadership PAC of either the chair or vice chair, or affiliated with those representatives' existing leadership PACs. The commission received one comment on the draft from the requester, and we're available for any questions y'all have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Counselor. Mr. Wang, I'd like to start with a couple of questions. But prior to that, let me express some sympathy for the position you find yourself in. This is occasioned a deep dive by my office, and I suspect by my colleagues, on the history and all of this. And I've been struck again and again in that effort by the daylight between the statute, which I've read a fair number of statutes in my time, and I haven't seen a lot where a list is not set off with commas, but rather, and here I'm quoting from the statute, we talk about political committees, quote, established or financed or maintained or controlled by any corporation. And the Federal Election Commission, in its wisdom, has conflated those four factors into a 10-factor balancing test. I'm sure there's probably some echoes of that in some of the litigation that's happened over the last 20 years. That being said, I did have a couple of questions for you as I've sort of wrestled with this, and in particular with the question of affiliation and the fact that both the statute and our regulations talk about groups that are established, financed, maintained, or controlled, which I'm going to call EFMCing, which will confuse everyone who doesn't do this for a living, but that's what tendency at this point. EFMC groups by groups of persons. That's both in the statute and in the regulation. And I guess my question to you is, given the facts of the board control of your clients, how do we give effect to that language?
I'm not sure I have a good answer to that question. I think it's, you know, it's just the fact that, you know, quite frankly, I don't know. I mean, I think draft A does a good job of coming to, you know, arriving at an approach that our client can live with, and that's consistent with the practice of some of the other PACs out there that we identified in our request. And draft A provides sufficient guidance for us to allow members of Congress to be involved in our client's activities and our client's governance. We did have some concerns with how draft A treats the contributions that were made by the leadership PACs of the proposed chair and vice chair of this committee. We don't think that draft A's analysis on that point makes a whole lot of sense. But in terms of your more general question about EFMC, I think it's, you know, the commission has taken sort of a know it when I see it approach on this issue, and it sort of makes it up as it goes along in the enforcement process and in the AO process. You know, it sort of picks at random certain thresholds where of involvement by members of Congress, certain thresholds of financing by members of Congress, and deems, you know, certain instances of those activities to be to trigger EFMC and affiliation findings, and certain instances when it doesn't. But there's no sort of bright line rules under either the commission's regulations or the precedents. So, I mean, that's why I don't have a very good answer for your general question.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I'll move on to the actual content of the EFMC test. But, you know, the question I think is most challenging on your facts is EFMC by whom? And that, you know, strikes me as going to sort of the heart of the statutory interpretation question. You know, does the group of persons that's controlling more than one PAC have to be exactly the same group of persons? How much overlap is too much? You know, and I'm not convinced either the statute or our regulations give us especially good guidance on that point. So I wanted to flag it for you in case you did have a good answer. But we can move on to the rest of it. I tend to agree with you, for what that's worth, on the financing issue. And I appreciate your comments that pointed out the sort of strange way in which we treat financing as part of the establishment test instead of as part of the financing test in some cases, and in some cases as part of the financing test. And I think that point is well made, and frankly is an argument that's much better situated in the statute, given, again, that these things are set off by ORs, which is an unusual level of emphasis from Congress. But, you know, what I guess my question is, who ultimately controls HLT?
Well, under the proposed bylaw provisions, you know, under one of our alternatives, it would be the entire board of directors of HLT. So under the current membership of the Hispanic Congressional Conference, that would be a board of eight members.
And that's my question is, I understand the board controls the organization. Does the entire board control the organization, or does a majority of the board control of an organization? And does it matter on these facts?
Well, I think you're right. Technically, a majority vote under the proposed bylaw provisions, a majority of the board would essentially control the committee.
Right. And I guess another question on those lines. You know, there's been some back and forth on what the proposed bylaws would look like in terms of how the board would be formed and what its composition would be. And I understand you're in the position of sort of asking for guidance on precisely that matter while we ask you questions about how you plan to do it. And, you know, that you could probably power a good sized city on the circular motion from that argument. But my question is, does your request contemplate a board, a majority of which does not control leadership acts? By analogy, essentially a board controlled by independent directors.
No,
contemplated?
I think your question was, would a majority of the board also control their own leadership acts? Did I hear you correctly on that?
So leaving aside that, the first question I asked you was control by whom, and that question doesn't become relevant if no one involved in any of this controls the ultimate organization. Mm-hmm. So we've got various approaches to the board, and you've got at least three examples which are largely keyed towards the finance aspect of this, which I understand. What I don't know is whether your request anticipates a board which would be controlled in the sense that a majority of the directors would not be people who under any argument are EMFCing or EFMCing rather, another PAC.
I think
members of Congress and three of their council, fill in the facts however you like, but basically where a majority of the board clearly is not caught up in any of this.
So I think in practice, each of the members of the board is likely to have their own leadership PACs, and typically a leadership PAC is considered to be controlled exclusively by one congressional sponsor, a member of Congress. And here, this is a PAC that is not controlled exclusively by any one member of Congress. And so under the common understanding of the Leadership Pact, I think Draft A correctly concludes that this Hispanic Leadership Trust, given its governance structure, is not a leadership pact because it requires, it's not controlled by any single member of Congress. It's a board of members. Yes, individually, each one probably will have their own leadership pack, but those leadership packs should not be considered affiliated with Hispanic Leadership Trust because HLT is, it takes more than one member of Congress to control HLT.
I understand that argument. I'm asking something about the scope of your request, which is HLT only interested in a board controlled by members of the caucus?
Is it only interested? Was that your question?
Yes.
No, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. I mean, we were interested in that potential option, but if the FEC were to issue an opinion saying that, a majority of the board cannot have members of Congress on its board, I think, if that's what the commission arrived at, that is something that we could live with.
Now that's helpful. Somewhat related question. I read your request as being directed to any member of the Congress of the caucus, any potential member of the board of directors, not solely the proposed chair and vice chair. For good and sufficient reasons, the analysis, at least of the public draft, is keyed towards the role of the chair and the vice chair. Can you say a little bit about the specific powers you envision for those officers and why they would not control the entity, given those delegations from the board?
Yeah, so I also picked up on that nuance, I guess, or quirk in the draft. The draft does focus more on the chair and vice chair, but you are correct in that our request also asked more broadly about the other members of the board of directors. And we did want to confirm that HLT would not be considered to be EFMC'd or affiliated with EFMC'd by any of those other members of the board, and also not affiliated with the leadership packs of any of the other members of those boards. In terms of what level of quote unquote control we envision by the chair and the vice chair, I think the level of control would be typical of any control exercise by individuals typically holding those titles. Under Draft A, it concludes that if those two individuals had to act in conjunction with the other members of the board, and all major decisions had to be made by a majority vote of the board of directors, then under Draft A, the authority of the chair and the vice chair would be quote unquote diluted by the votes of those other members of the board of directors. And so in that sense, the proposed chair and vice chair would not be controlling between the two of them, HLT. And that's something we understand. We understand where Draft A is coming from in that respect.
Well, I guess two related questions. I mean, first, not to put too fine a point on it, but sometimes you have a situation where the control group of an organization, for lack of a better term, is subject to oversight by an evenly divided supervisory body with the possibility of deadlock. And in such circumstances, it may be that a person with such delegated authority essentially has a level of autonomy that is not necessarily anticipated by the bylaws. So I guess that'd be my first question as regards Draft A, is what's your response to that? And relatedly, in the context of you know, I suspect that the powers that are granted by the board to the chair or vice chair are going to be relevant. I noticed that one of your drafts specifically left questions of how funds were to be distributed in terms of the contributions that were going to be made to board votes, which I think is a pretty strong factor against control. But there's also a line in one of your responses about how the expectation is that day-to-day management would be handled by contractors. And it seemed to me, though it wasn't elusively clear, but it seemed to me that a good reading of your request was that the intention was to have those contractors be selected by board vote. So could you, I guess, spell out a little bit of what you... I don't see this as a pure sort of CEO-level delegation, given what is in some of these papers. I'm wondering which powers you intend or expect will be subject to the board vote and which powers will be essentially delegated.
Yeah, so I mean, to address your first question about deadlocks, and I guess the analogy to the commission.
I thought I was being subtle.
I'm sorry?
I thought I was being subtle.
Well, I think the proposed bylaw provisions would sort of be parallel to how the commission operates. With the 8-member board initially being contemplated, it is an evenly divided, it is an even number, and so it's possible that there could be deadlocks. And under the proposed bylaw provisions, any decision of the board requires a majority vote. And so if it's a 4-4 deadlock, that is not a majority, and the motion would not carry. The board would not be able to act. I mean, the chairman and the vice chair would not be able to override the vote of the board of directors under draft A. And so
can I jump in?
Yes.
I'm specifically thinking about, say, a 2-member board, which is one of the things that's anticipated. So the analogy wouldn't be, you know, organizational officer decision goes out to the board and the board deadlocks. It would be that the officer controls half the board and therefore can force a deadlock.
Right.
And does that mean that officer essentially controls the organization?
I mean, that's sort of a philosophical question. I mean,
well, do you expect an officer to vote against their decision in a board meeting? I mean, that seems surprising to me.
Do I expect an officer to vote against?
The chair takes a decision. The vice chair doesn't like it. It is taken to a board meeting for overrule. The chair votes in favor of the decision taking. The vice chair votes against. The board splits 50-50, therefore failing or declining, depending on your philosophy, to overturn the decision of that chair. The chair is in a position to prevent any oversight of the chair's decisions. Is that control?
I'm not sure I follow your scenario.
Okay, so one of the things you suggested is we're going to have 2 board members, a chairman and a vice chairman. So far, am I right?
I'm not sure that that's actually something we specifically contemplated in our proposal, a board of only 2 members. I don't think that's what we were proposing.
Then I misunderstood your request. It's fine. If that's not what you're contemplating, then that eliminates that objection.
We were proposing a board of the entire Congressional Hispanic Conference, which is more than 2 members. I mean, it's theoretically possible that at some point the Congressional Hispanic Conference could consist of only 2 members, but we don't think that's likely, and that's not what's immediately being contemplated.
Okay, that leaves me, that still does leave the second question of what powers are being delegated.
Yeah, I think, just the day-to-day activities, the administrative functions, for example, would be carried on by contractors. Members of Congress, of course, are very busy with all sorts of other, all sorts of other legislative activities. So they can't be involved in micromanaging the day-to-day activities of the committee. More major decisions, including the hiring of the vendors themselves and the consultants, that is a function we would contemplate being assumed by the board of directors and the officers. and major decisions like which candidates that the committee contributes to, which is really major function of this of the PAC, those would be made by the board of directors as well.
That's very helpful. That's all the questions I had. I really appreciate your time. Alex? Enjoying my discussion with Mr. Wang. So, sorry if I ran over anyone. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Mr. Wang. It's always a pleasure to see you again.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I just wanted to state for the record that this was not a draft that I was likely to support. There's been some work in the background. There's another draft in the background that I held off on making public because it wasn't clear that that would get support. We didn't want to confuse the requester or the public with having multiple drafts out there, and everybody's trying to figure out, well, what's the operative draft? Where are they really going with this? So there have been. Just want to assure you there have been discussions, and I expect there will be at least one more draft forthcoming, and perhaps we'll even be able to answer your question. So I appreciate that you were willing to give us a little bit more time to work that out. And mindful of the previous discussion, I'm hopeful that we can get a draft out to the public, not at the last minute before the next meeting.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Always best to be clear in such matters. Colleagues, any further questions? Mr. Wang, with our thanks for your attendance and for especially answering all of my questions about your request. And I think at least most of our appreciation, perhaps all of our appreciation for the extension. I look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir.